and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, published author and national treasure. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Are we really categorized as fake news?
No, we're real news.
I'm looking at it right here. They're saying, you know, fake.
Everything we say is true.
As the Royal Rumble ending, I'm telling you. And I, for the record, I haven't seen the Royal Rumble. I've just heard people kvetching about the ending.
I didn't mind the ending. I thought the ending was okay. I'll probably watch it. I think they promised a bigger payoff with Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, and The Undertaker being in the ring at the same time. But, yeah, we got to remember, Undertaker's in his 50s. Goldberg's at least 50. And Lesnar doesn't work that much. I like the Rumble. I always like the Rumble match. The Rumble was the first actual pay-per-view that I ever bought. The Rumble that ended with Hogan and Warrior in the middle of the ring. That was the first wrestling pay-per-view I bought because I was married at the time, and my future ex-wife had moved up two of her friends from Missouri. We had a one-bedroom apartment and a small child, and she moved up two of her friends. Then when she moved out, one of the friends moved out. The other one stayed because she had no place else to go. And the Rumble was coming, and she begged, "Will you get the Rumble? Will you get the Rumble? I'll pay you half if you get the Rumble." And I was watching wrestling at the group home at the time, so it's like, okay, I'll get the Rumble. These pay-per-views seem silly, but I'll get the Rumble. And it was the one where it came down to Hogan and Warrior at the very end, and it started their feud, and I was kind of hooked, and that was back when there were only four pay-per-views a year for WWE, and I think there were either three or four for WCW, but the Rumble was the first one I got. I know we talk about every year we try to get together for Mania, but I always try to watch the Rumble. The Rumble's always fun, because it's, you know, two men start, and then every 2 minutes, somebody else comes in. And
yeah, I always got the Royal Rumble. The first one for me was WrestleMania III. So I started an old time, one of the classic ones. So that was a lot of fun. But since then, with the WWE Network, I just kind of go with it.
Yep. Matter of fact, the NXT TakeOver show the night before was really good, too. Our main event was Nakamura versus Bobby Roode. 2 years ago, if you would have told me they'd be wrestling at the main event of a WWE pay-per-view, I'd go, well, that's kind of crazy. Nakamura's over in New Japan. He's their number one guy. And Bobby Roode's the only star TNA has left. They're not going to let him go, are they? Yeah, they let him go. And Nakamura wanted to come to the U.S. because that's where the big boys play. The Nakamura match was amazing, though, because even in the middle of the match, the crowd would start doing his theme song. So loud, it was almost louder than the announcers. Just a great weekend for wrestling.
But that's not what this here podcast is about.
It's not?
No, there are better, more nationally treasured podcasters talking about wrestling than us.
Oh, what's our podcast about?
Well, we could talk about how I'm picking the chocolate goldfish out of this pretzel chocolate goldfish mix. But they're mint chocolate.
Oh.
No, we could talk.
Are they chocolate-flavored or are they covered with chocolate?
No, chocolate-flavored.
Oh, well, that's no fun.
Yeah, you got to take what you can get.
I made chocolate-covered biscotti about a week and a half ago that I still haven't eaten.
Nobody cares because it's Girl Scout season. And I got to put it out there, I don't have a single Girl Scout anymore to sell me my Thin Mints, so If you're out there and you want to figure out a way to contact me and sell me some Girl Scout cookies.
Now, Joe, I know that here in the Minnesota, they've kind of legalized pot in a weird way. You can buy it in pill form, but all the stuff that makes you high has to be removed from it. So do we have dispensaries yet? I don't know about that. Do we?
I have no idea.
Because if you're...
Even if we did, I couldn't get it because, you know, being a federal employee, I'm constantly under the threat of random drug testing. And pot's one of the big no-nos.
But I thought you could go there and there would be, you know, some smart Girl Scout who has set up right across the door because, you know, people coming out of a pot store, they got the munchies.
The last Girl Scout that did that was scolded by her scout leader not to do that.
And how dumb is that?
I am very dumb. I'd have told the scout leader, you know, hey, stick it and tell the girl to sit back there.
Sit down and make money, baby.
Where else are you going to find them? You know, outside grocery stores on weekends, sometimes in the back of churches.
Cub Foods.
You know, you probably won't find them at MSP Comic Con 2017. May 20th and 21st at the Minnesota State Fair Grandstand. And, of course, as we all know, the advance tickets are on sale at www.mcbacomiccons.com. Their guest list is slowly taking place. They're sending out invites and confirmations even as we speak.
Any names yet? Have the unholy trinity given us any hints as to who they've gotten?
Have to go over to their website and check it out because I'm not. The real reason is because what I'm doing now is I want to pimp for the charity booth because, as you know, my daughter and I are doing the charity booth this year, and what's going to happen is Dana's decided two things. She's getting away from what you and I used to do where it was kind of a, hey, you got red in your ledger, you tell me what you want to pay, more towards she's going to actually have things priced out.
Holy cats!
Yeah, it's her baby. She's doing it the way she wants. She also got rid of a lot of the white elephant aspect of it because a lot of it didn't really go last year. But what did go were a lot of the things that were comic related. So she's putting out the call, and I'm sending it out to our dear listeners, that if you have some stuff, you know, comics, toys, graphic novels, just things that you just don't want to know what to do with it. They're not eBayable. They're not half price. You're never going to get nothing for them at a comic store. But you can get a tax write-off because 100% of the proceeds raised by the charity booth do go to the three charities that the MCBA is working with. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Minnesota
Autism. Lupus.
Minnesota Lupus. Is it a foundation or association?
Foundation, sure. I do believe.
And then Bikers Against Abuse. At least those are the three I'm aware of. There may be more. I know there's other charity groups within the building, but those are the three that they do the art auction and the thing for them. So if you do have something that you're interested in and you want to figure out how to get it to me, contact us via the email Corey drops during our sponsorship, or that Corey might want to drop now. Subtle hint.
Solitaire Rose Network. @gmail.com. By the way, Joe, a little trivia question for you. The first art auction, what was the charity that we were raising money for?
Was it the Minnesota Literacy Foundation?
Damn right, the Minnesota Literacy Council. And
yep.
That was my baby. I got a hold of George Hagenauer, I don't think he does anymore, but he used to run the art auction at the Chicago convention. I got a hold of him and asked if he wanted to come up and have a table and do the art auction for us. And that's how the art auction began.
Interesting. Because he does show up as a dealer at these shows. And it's always fun because he's got always some of the most vintage stuff I've seen.
Great guy. Does a lot of research for Max Allen Collins. When you read a Max Allen Collins novel, you'll see in the back, you know, where he has the, you know, I owe them one, the people who did behind-the-scenes work for his novels. Hagenauer does a lot of research for him. Max Collins, who wrote Batman, and also one of my favorite comics of the 80s, Ms. Tree. We ought to get Max Collins here one of these years. Because we had Terry Beatty here forever.
Oh, yeah.
Till he moved, the bastard.
Sneaky guy.
Moved to Kansas City because he wanted to watch drive-in movie Maniacs on their local public access cable channel, which is hosted by the Midnight Rose, who we've had on this show before.
in his secret identity of Blade Braxton.
But
there, did I drop enough names?
I think so.
But yeah, I think every so often I'll be dropping some history of the MCBA cons, because I was there at the beginning when we were at Annie's Parlor in Uptown, just starting to put it together.
Cool.
When it was just an idea in the minds of a few comic fans and two comic professionals. Joe, do you know who the two professionals were? At the very beginning.
Studebaker Hawk and Lemming Flesher.
No.
Oh.
Dan Juergens and Gordon Purcell. We were then quickly joined by Reed Waller and Kate Worley of Omaha the Cat Dancer fame.
Cool.
Where Reed and Kate told me how they would raise money if they were running low on funds. They'd run an ad in the city pages for how to potty train your cat. You know, and they would have a P.O. box, and it's how to potty train your cat. And they'd charge $10. And what it is, they'd have like a three mimeograph sheets, back when there were mimeographs, three mimeograph sheets. And you'd start by putting the litter box on top of your toilet. And then you progressively get smaller litter boxes until you no longer have a litter box there. And by then, your cat will be using the toilet. And reminded me a lot of those comic book ads.
How's the toilet?
Well, the whole, for $10, we'll teach you how to do this. And then really, it's just three sheets of paper. Well, how's that for a segue, Joe?
That's adequate.
Because Joe sent me a article about ads in comic books.
Yes.
And he asked if I had ever mailed away for anything in a comic book. And my answer is no, other than other comic books. Now, when I was in high school, the high school musical, we would do three musicals every fall, and one of them that we did was Lil Abner. And there's a scene in Lil Abner where someone drinks the Kickapoo Joy Juice, and they get big and heavily muscled like Lil Abner. And they were looking for something to make the person look big and muscular, and it was when the Hulk TV series was on, and they had the ad for the Pump Up Hulk Muscles. And it was something that you would put on under your shirt, and then you would pump this pump, but it would, you know, fill up with air so it looked like you had muscles. And it didn't work for shit, so they wasted $12 on that thing.
I remember I sent away, I think, for three things other than, you know, we talked about the freebie comics a number of podcasts ago. I sent away once for the Sea Monkeys, which I thought would be kind of fun to have the Sea Monkeys floating around. And what happened was, is when I got them, I was missing a packet of the magic elixir that would make them automatically hatch, not realizing that all it was just food. Because as we all know, the Sea Monkeys were just brine shrimp, which you could pick up almost anywhere and sell anywhere. And they just toss eggs in the water and they pretty much hatch by themselves. So I never did get to play with my sea monkeys. I figured, well, I didn't get the brine, the magic mixture to make them wake up, so I just kind of threw the whole packets away.
Oh, and they died.
No, they were never living. They were just eggs. So.
Still. Now, for a while there, they were selling the sea monkeys in stores. Did you buy them in the stores just to see what you were missing?
No, by that time I'd already read about it, so I knew what it was. So, no
but
fun.
The ads made them look cool, though, because it was like,
they did.
There are families, and they will do tricks to entertain you.
And you could shine a light, and they'd follow around the light, and all sorts of other goofy things. The second thing I sent away for, grit.
Well, I think most people just brush their teeth to get rid of that.
Was it grit or seeds? I forget. It was one of those two where you know, they had the thing. If you sell this many, you can win a bike. And if you sell this many, you can get a motorbike. And so,
oh, they
you know,
had
you got
that for grit, seeds, and greeting cards.
All I remember is when I got the big-ass box, my ma read me the riot act and packed it up and sent them back. Never got a single seed out of it. I mean, I was like, you know, I mean, we've talked it before. I've sold candy for the school I went to. I've been a Boy Scout. I sold Christmas wreaths. I've done all sorts of door-to-door selling before I actually had a real business. And, you know, to me, it was no big deal. But nope. Sent it back. That was the end of that.
And I guess that magazine is still around, but it's sold differently now. Back then, it was, this is good news. It's positive news. And it was like a small town newspaper and stuff. And I remember seeing it at the barbershop and reading it and going, there's nothing in here but about poor people who find money. This is boring. I want to know what Nixon's doing, damn it. Yeah, I was that.
Well, you know, you could have used the little spy camera that I did actually send away for.
Ooh.
And now I don't recall if I sent away for it via the ad in the back of the comics, you know, the big multi-ad. I want to think I did, because I do remember getting the X-ray vision specs at one time, which were mightily disappointing for a young pubescent boy.
They were just glasses with a feather in them, right?
No, well, what they did is they had a little tiny hole that would actually kind of somehow double you. If you're looking at your hand, you see a shadow that, that's your bone inside your finger. Right. So that was kind of disappointing. But the camera was actually kind of cool. I'm not sure, like I said, did I get it to the ad or did I send away 50 Bazooka Joe bubblegum things to get one? Because they had all sorts of cool things, too. And in the beginning, it was like, for 50 Bazooka Joe comics, you can get this free. And then later on, it was like, 10 Bazooka Joe comics with $2 or $5 shipping or whatever. Because somewhere in my vast accumulation of crap, I have a pack of 50 Bazooka Joe comics that I was going to mail away to get another camera. Because my first one, I lost. It was pretty damn small, you know. I mean, it fit in the palm of your hand.
Yeah,
and what was worse
camera
is trying to find the film for it. And back then, you could find film for almost anything. And I think I had found one roll of film. Probably my mom found it. And, you know, ran around taking the pitch key about it. But then I lost the camera before I ever developed them, so I have no idea if it actually worked or not. And, of course, we talked a while back. I got a hardcover copy of Mail Order Mysteries by Kirk DeMarius, and it's a huge book. It's out in paperback now that talks about all the different mail order mysteries that, you know, you've probably seen. And some of the things I've actually seen on eBay and some of the other ones, like when you send away for those massive army men or the Civil War set or the cowboy Indian or Revolutionary War sets, they weren't like the 3D plastic army men that we're familiar with. They were really thin wisps of plastic and cardboard pieces of tanks and forts and things like that. And sometimes you see them pop up on eBay or just various places around. I was thinking, I saw some on this site I go to, thetoypeddler.com, and people selling them for anywhere 10 to 50 bucks, depending on how complete they were. Why, this year podcast, too, we played the Nobody Likes the Hulk record that I actually found off eBay. The off vinyl itself, I guess that's a big thing as I'm listening to some of the radio station. Yes, this one was off vinyl, not CD like some of those other fakes.
Which I find funny, because when I first moved to Minneapolis back in 87, 88, all the radio stations were like, we are now 90% digital.
Digital.
That's right. 90% of our music is on CD.
I forget who did this song. Nobody does. Oh, The Traits. And, of course, if you go to YouTube, you can find a version of it and listen to it yourself. Or just go back, find it in our podcast, because we dropped it in our podcast here.
Yeah, that was in one of the April Fool's episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
our most famous April Fool's episode.
Not like anything's dropped from the future that we're aware of, but who knows.
Well, there was that one. There was the morning radio show one.
Yep.
I like the morning radio show one. The one from the future was cool. I only had to say one word.
That was a pretty complainant word. You were complaining. Apparently you turn out to be a bitter old man that shoot people off the grass and fire guns in the air.
And that shocks you why?
I do know our good buddy Nick. He never got a chance to see it, but he got a hold of one of those Polaris submarines that was not put together yet.
It's cardboard.
And he was actually going to bring it to one of the cons before he passed away. He was trying to decide to assemble it or not. And I was like, oh, I really wanted to see that. But,
now,
I don't even think I've done anything recently. I mean, there was a Lexus ad in one of the comics that had you sent away for and you got a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book, and I think I actually ended up selling that one on my eBays. So occasionally you'll find things online, but I don't really even look at the ads in comics. I just kind of flip through and keep going.
Well, most of the ads now are for other comics.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find very interesting is, you know, as I'm digging into the history of comics and stuff, I read about how you and I talked about it on the series in review, where Marvel was down to 18 pages. Their comics were only 18 pages long. The rest were all ads. And one of the things that everybody at the company believed was, well, you know, if it's not for the ads, we wouldn't be making any profit. One of the things that Shooter found out was that they don't make money on the ads. The ads don't charge enough for the ads for it to make a lot of money to offset the cost of the comic. And you can tell when that happened because all of a sudden then comics, Marvel went back to, you know, 19, 20, 22. Then now they're up to, I think they're at 24 pages. But man, back in the 70s, I remember with a Marvel book, you'd be splash page, two pages of ads. Two pages of ads. Two pages of ads. Four pages of comic, four pages of ads. Two pages of comic, two pages of ads. Two pages of comic, two pages of ads. Two pages of comic, one page of ads in the back cover. And you got used to, okay, and you would see continued on the page following the next. As if they have to tell you, hey, story's not over yet. Just because you turn the page and there's an ad doesn't mean the story's over. Keep reading, kid.
I always liked the Legion of Superheroes Darkness Saga when Supergirl's getting ready to belt Darkseid into the moon. The ad from the other side bled into it. And it happened to be like this roundabout maze. And it really gave a freaky effect that I actually thought was part of the storyline until you flip the page over. Oh, it's just the ad bleeding through. So now when I see a new copy in a graphic novel, all clean, I'm like, ah, that doesn't look right. I like it better where it's like she's boom. Now, if you Google comic book squirrel monkeys, look for the article for comicbookresources.com where a guy talks about getting a mail order squirrel monkey and what it was like. Because it was like for $13.95, you could actually get a real
live monkey.
Squirrel monkey. And this guy talks about it and what happened. And I'm not going to ruin it or anything, but just check it out because it's just – I mean, obviously they're not going to do that type of shit nowadays, but
– I don't think you can mail live things anymore, but you used to be able to.
And
to the point where when I'm reading a 50s comic, they'll have ads for, you know, 100 live chicks. And then – when I was learning about the border radio, you know, where when rock and roll was kind of, especially in the South, it was, well, we won't play that Negro music on our fine white stations. You had these people go across the border into Mexico where there were no limits on the wattage you could use for your transmitter. And Wolfman Jack, that's how he became famous. He was at one of these pirate border radio stations. And he would play the rock and roll, baby. Yes, he's the Wolfman, and we're going to be playing rock and roll all night long. And my
dad, for the Wolfman, he's going to get your records hot.
My dad talked about listening to Wolfman Jack in the early 60s in, you know, in central Illinois. He's broadcasting out of Tijuana. They were pouring so much juice into those transmitters that rumor is that the wire fences up to a mile away, you could hear the radio station from the vibrations on those wire fences. That's how much power they were pumping out. But a lot of the ads were for live chicks, squirrel monkeys, you know, things like that, that you can order through the mail, baby.
Did you know over 173,000 squirrel monkeys were imported into the U.S. between 68 and 72 as pets? More than 60% of them had the simian foamy virus with them. Kind of scary to think that these potential disease carriers are being sold to children for pets, huh? Not that
through
long
the
ago.
Mail. Through the mail.
Crazy.
I can't imagine how angry that monkey would be when you open the box he's in.
Oh, go read that article I talked about.
I'm not going to. It'll just make me sad.
Well, he got a, I mean, it was a pet. He got along with it. One thing I remember is that, you know, he did have a cage for it, and what he'd do is let him out the cage. Monkey would fly around and eventually come back in the cage. But it was never a, you know, sit on your shoulder pet monkey. So,
like in the ads?
Not like in, yes.
In the ads, they have him wearing a little hat. But nope, never bought any of that stuff. I think part of it was my dad may have bought that stuff in the 50s because he would always look at it and go, ah, you know, that stuff's all crap.
Crap. Never last.
And a lot of the stuff, now, not every company would take ads. If you read the Warren books, they didn't have outside ads. Do you know why?
No.
Because Jim Warren had his publishing arm, and then he had Captain Company. So all the ads in your Warren magazines were for ordering stuff from Captain Company. The monster masks, back issues, 8mm film, Aurora models, record albums, all that stuff. Warren had a big warehouse. So in a lot of ways, a lot of his magazines were just a comic book with a catalog in the back for the stuff that he sold to the horror fans. And he sold a lot more of it through Famous Monsters of Filmland, of course. But, you know, you pick up Creepy into the 70s, it's like, oh, look, here's all the Star Wars merchandise that he was selling. You get to 81, he's got tons of Empire Strikes Back merchandise he's selling. And a lot of people say that's why Marvel's black and white magazines didn't last as long, because Jim Warren made his money partly with the magazines, but mostly with the merchandise he sold in the ads in the back issues. Now, Marvel, I know, did sell some of their magazines through ads like that, but a lot of the ads for Marvel merchandise in the 70s were through a place called Superhero Warehouse.
Yeah, occasionally you can find their catalogs in, well, for sale through eBay and various comic dealers. And it's always weird because you look at it because it was like they would advertise Marvel and DC sometimes in the same ad. So yeah, very confusing.
Yeah.
Not as confusing as that Clark Bar ad, though. Do you remember that thing in the middle? Yeah, you had to gut your thing, or they later, if you read the small print, send in just three Clark Bar. And you would get a chance to be in a comic book of your choosing. Although,
and we never found out.
Nope.
What comic book it was. It's the same with the big Toys R Us thing.
Yeah, yeah. This comic could be worth, was it $10,000?
Yeah. The big banner across the top. Yet, a few years ago, somebody said, well, who won that? And they weren't ever able to find out who won it or if there was even a winner. Now, with the Superman thing, because there was a thing in the DC comics where you could be in Superman 2, I have seen where they pointed out the two kids who won. A boy won and a girl won. And they were, you know, extras. They didn't get a line, but it was a lot of that. You could be in the new Superman movie.
Yeah. Did they get to at least point?
I don't remember.
I'd have to look. See how easy you folks have it? We point you, and all you have to do is Google it.
We've read this stuff. We remember living through it.
And we never knew. And sometimes we never will.
Now, Joe, I remember in the 90s, a lot of dealers got really horked off over the Marvel Mart.
Yeah, it didn't bother me as much.
Did you, first off, when it was in the books, did you even care?
Not particularly. What I was more annoyed with was the fact that it was they were offering stuff that I couldn't get. But, you know, American Entertainment, they were doing the same thing. They had all these great variants that you had to buy from them. And this was before eBay was up and running. Nowadays, you just go on eBay. You know, like I said, the aforementioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Lexus ad, you want one? Get it on eBay. Or I think the last one I actually was looking for was there was a Sears Craftsman giveaway. I went to the Sears store, they had no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But by God, there are people calling them crazy on eBay, and they're only a couple bucks now. But who knows? If Sears goes out of business, they could go up.
Well, it Sears, Kmart too.
Well, same thing. Kmart bought Sears. Yeah.
Yes.
More an indictment of Sears than it is Kmart. So.
I don't even know where the nearest Kmart is anymore.
Yeah, we got one nearby. And then, of course, the one down in St. Paul, Sears, that's where I spent 10 years from the Sears catalog all the way till the September before I done open the comic book shop. Which, if you listened to Solo Joe number one, you would have heard all about that.
No. Solo Joe 3 and 4.
Well, it's part 1. Well, and part 4 is not out yet, but we'll get to that when we get to geeking.
Yeah, but part 1 is Joe showing that he could be a morning DJ in a small town.
Ooh, whoa, what a bitch you are. Boy, I offer Corey just nothing but praise and glory for all of his podcast.
Oh, bullshit!
Folks, you know, it's my fault you got this podcasting machine for your listening enjoyment. And even you admit it, because we talked about the origin of this here podcast. You know, we're just driving and talking and the way geeks do it is, hey, we should be recording this stuff.
Well, and I often say, my idea for the show was us to do a version of WrestleCrap Radio where we talked about the worst comics ever printed. And you, quite wisely, just wouldn't go along.
Well, it could be a podcast, but the problem is every month they're trying to outdo themselves. So you'll never be able to get to the worst comic ever made. Although it could be Death May. I really thought after all this, I'd hold it. Oh, God, chocolate goldfish. Yuck.
You know, one of the things we haven't done in a while is review a comic.
That is true.
And DC was very kind and gave us early access to a comic that's coming out on Wednesday. And we aren't supposed to talk about it till the day it comes out. So we're not reviewing the trade paperback that comes out on Wednesday. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. We're reviewing the 6 issues of Scooby Apocalypse.
Roll.
By JMD Matias, Keith Giffen, and Howard Porter.
And I do got to say, when this concept first came out, Jim Lee was pushing it. And I was like,
Jim Lee came up with the concept.
You know what?
He is listed as the creator.
And he is one of the two big kahunas at DC. So when Jim Lee talks, people die. I mean, listen. People listen. Sorry, Jim. I don't want him torqued at me.
I don't want anybody to die.
Well, not because of Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, although they do. Kids, this is not your father's Scooby-Doo.
This is not a comic for kids.
I don't know about that, but I would be cautious of the kid you give it to. The story I think of is like when Dana was growing up, she really, really loved Scooby-Doo. one of the fond memories we had, they had this big Scooby-Doo that was almost as tall as she was. And every day we'd go, well, day almost, but every time we'd go to Toys R Us, we'd walk along and, you know, I'd pick up whatever toys I was going for and she'd want to go over to Scooby-Doo. I'd take it down. She'd give it a big hug and she'd bring it up. Well, when they first came out, and I'm talking DC, came out with Scooby-Doo comic, I thought, okay, we're here. I got a promotion. I'll buy this big Scooby-Doo. We'll make a big thing about it, and then people can throw their names in a bucket, and the winner can take it home. So it was a lot of fun when I brought it down, and Dana come up, gave it a big hug, and she said, well, what should we do with it? Well, you can put it back. I said, no, let's take it home. Really? And then we'd start walking to the front. Are we really taking this home? Yes. All the way in, up to the cash. Are we really taking this home? And we really took it home. I never did auction it off because there was no way it was going to happen, not after she fell in love with it. And I'd have to talk to Dana. It is still around. I don't know if she has it or if we gave it to my niece. But so that was when DC came out with the first Scooby-Doo comic, and I don't even know... Oh, I got my previews on the other side of the room. What number they're up to. So they're still doing the classic Scooby-Doo, and they're also doing a fun comic I love called Scooby-Doo Team-Up with the classic Scooby-Doo and teaming up with Batman, Superman, Space Ghost, whoever's coming up.
The Harlem Globetrotters?
It could happen. Now, Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, what I was getting to before I started... reminiscing about my daughter, there was a time when they revamped the on-screen Scooby-Doo with the tag, this time the monsters are real. Five-year-old Dana was scared shitless. And of course, about a year or two later, she watched it and she's like, I remember being scared by this, but I'm not anymore. So that's kind of what's happening here. I mean, this is not for kids. It's rated T, which means teen. And of course, with the apocalypse, you could read, yeah, this is Scooby-Doo zombies, but it's a little more complex than that.
It's all kinds of monsters. You get, you know, just weird, creepy monsters, but you also get vampires and you get demons and, there is some creativity to the different monsters. The plot is that there is a group of scientists in the future.
The future!
Who have developed some nanobots that are going to change the human race. And Velma is involved with these scientists, and she thought that the nanobots would... make people into docile consumers. But no, somehow they've mysteriously been released.
And they've gone wrong. It's gone very, very wrong.
And everybody has, every human being has become a monster. The way Shaggy and Scooby are into it, Scooby was a genetically modified dog that was going to be an attack dog for the military. A smart dog, and Shaggy was his keeper.
And he can rock, too.
Yep. Not Velma.
Daphne.
Fred and Daphne are people who do a reality show on the Knitting Channel about you know, mysteries. And we find out that Daphne was once an actual journalist who something has happened to, and she had to resort to this to have a career, and they meet as the world is turning into this apocalypse. Joe, what was your opinion?
I actually enjoyed it. It was an interesting take. There are enough in Scooby jokes, and I'm trying to find them, where, you know, long-term fans will catch it, and like all of a sudden Fred yells, "Mole people!" and throws a camera and knocks out Velma, not realizing it was her. So for long-term Scooby fans, I think you'll enjoy it. The mystery as to what's really going on by the time you get to issue 6 isn't totally revealed. And there are other characters popping up. I'm not going to mention the one that I'm sure 95% of us will groan about, but I find it's kind of an interesting read. It's lighthearted enough to not be totally serious. The only problem I really see with this is just how long are we going to go before we get any real answers, any real resolution? I'm looking at you, Walking Dead. I'm looking at you, Afterlife with Archie. You know, Walking Dead, again, they're going their own way. They deal with the humans. The zombie thing is just in the background 90% of the time. Afterlife with Archie just sounds like it collapsed into its own weight. I think the last thing I heard...
Well, the guy who writes it is now running
Riverdale yeah,
TV
so,
show.
So
he's probably getting a little more money doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but... And, of course, you know, the other Walking Dead, you know, Kirkman, he probably goes crazy doing the show and then writes the comic for fun. You know, I don't know. But either way. So, again, depending on how long you're going to go before you really have answers, this is not a miniseries. This is an ongoing. So, I mean, this will go as long as it sells. I don't know how long I'm going to hang on with it. I mean, sitting down and reading 1 through 6 was actually kind of fun. But I don't know much more I would want to hang on, or maybe, you know, like we always ask at the end of the review, this might be one I might want to just wait, pick up the graphic novel, or see if I can get it through my local library. What was your opinion on it, Corey?
Well, I have talked on the show in the past. I was not a fan of Scooby-Doo as a kid because I felt that they lied to me. They pushed it as, oh, there are ghosts. And every episode, oh, it's a ghost. And the mystery was always, it was, you know, the same thing. It was, you know, somebody who owned a failing business was dressing up like a ghost to try and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you do remember the one about the robot, right, running around the amusement park? Because that was the only time it wasn't somebody in a mask. It was just an errant robot, which I thought was significant. Yeah. But that was the only time they went to that. And as far as I could tell, in Apocalypse, they haven't pulled off any masks yet.
No. So when I started reading this, my first thought is the same thought I had with Afterlife with Archie and other things where they take...
good, wholesome childhood memories.
Where they take kids' properties and try to mold them into properties for adults. And 90% of the time, it just doesn't work. Because the creation can't carry the weight. And I always say it would be like if you're reading Richie Rich and you find out that his dad made all his money by being a drug kingpin. It doesn't work. This, I wanted to really like this. I love Giffen and DeMatteis. Every time they work together, their Justice League stuff, the most recent Justice League 3000, their Defenders series, all the stuff that they have done I've enjoyed. Howard Porter was an artist who I didn't much care for when he did JLA with Grant Morrison. But his work here is 100 times better. The characters are smoother, their designs are better. I actually really enjoyed the art, and I think he did a good job of updating the characters for this world, and the monsters he draws are very creative. But by 3 issues in, I was like, where is this going? There's no forward momentum to the plot. There were 2 whole issues, actually three, where one, they go to a Quickie Mart and they're digging through the food. And the whole joke of the story is that Shaggy and Scooby are eating all the junk food and everything, and there's a vampire that we don't even, you know, the vampire kind of wanders around and then attacks them the next issue. And then we get 2 issues inside of a Walmart where, again, it's, oh, look at all the food. And it just doesn't seem like it's really moving forward. It's not going anywhere. And the backstories of the characters are just feel like cliches. You know, the last story in the 6 issues that they're collecting into the trade, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, is Velma's backstory, and there was nothing new to it. She was a really smart girl who had no social skills. And then these her brothers, who knew she was really smart, exploited her intelligence to create this horrible nanovirus. I knew that's where they were going in the first issue. I knew when we finally got to her backstory, it would be that. There's nothing new here for me. And there's not that love of the characters that I think could propel other people to read it. So by the end, I was pretty much, I was tapping out. I was really tapping out, especially with the Velma origin story. It was, you're taking way too long. There's nothing new here. Can we just move it along, please? So, Joe, the way we review books is buy, borrow, or ignore.
Well, I bought the first six issues. By the way, they'll probably go up on eBay any day soon. I will probably borrow the trades either through a library or maybe I'll find a cheap one somewhere. How about you, Mr. Strode?
I felt no need to keep reading. I'm sorry. I think if you're a Scooby-Doo fan who grew up with the characters, you might find this interesting. But there was nothing really new here. There was nothing unique here. And when I pick up DeMatteis and Giffen, I expect a lot more humor. The dialogue, in a lot of ways, was really cliche. When I would get to a new issue, and they would work the recap in, they'd kind of crowbar the recap in, and people would reintroduce themselves. I know every issue is somebody's first, but it just got very repetitious, and by the end I was tapping out. I really don't care where it goes. They didn't make me invest in, well, what's the true story? And I don't know if it's because, to me, the characters are so one-dimensional, or it's just, I've read too many of these where you take kids' characters and make them adult characters. Now, we have two pieces of sad news that I want to talk about. And the first is Bernie Wrightson, a comic artist who's been best known for his work in the 70s, but he's been working ever since. He's done illustrations for Stephen King novels. He's worked in movies. If you saw the first Ghostbusters, most of the ghosts were his designs. He's also the co-creator of Swamp Thing. Has a very unique art style. He's one of those artists that other artists point to, and they go, he's why I became an artist. He's been really sick for the past few years, and he was working on a project that had gone through a Kickstarter when he ended up in the hospital. I think it was last November. And he and his wife announced that while he's getting better, he's learned that he really is not going to be able to draw any longer. So he announced his retirement from drawing. He will still be autographing prints and things like that for the Kickstarter people, or if he's able to get well enough to go to conventions, but he'll no longer draw. And I think that's one of the first times I've ever heard an artist say they've retired from drawing. Joe, were you a Bernie Wrightson fan?
I was. He was one of the people, if I saw he was doing a book, I would definitely pick it up. And I'd have to see a checklist and go down, yeah, read it, need to read it. I know I hunted down the early Swamp Things, knowing he was part of it. Because as you know, having listened to Solo Joe number one, the relaunch of Saga of the Swamp Thing was like the first book Pat and I bought together. Bernie had nothing to do with it, but we were certainly aware of the earlier run. And then, of course, when he dropped off it ended up, I don't know, like a Twilight Zone Swamp Thing. I'm superhero Swamp Thing with a moss cape. But those early issues are definitely worth picking up. His horror work was always fun. I want to say I read a lot of stuff of his if he was working like Pacific, but you know, without a checklist in front of me, I'd have to look it out.
He did some work at Pacific. He also, if you've seen the movie Heavy Metal.
Oh, absolutely. I actually got a DVD of it.
Captain Stern was his character from the magazine.
Stern!
And then in the late 80s, early 90s, he did a 5-issue miniseries through Kitchen Sink of the character that I don't think has ever been collected in a book.
No, I'd have been on that. Let me Google it while you continue your...
For me, Bernie Wrightson, because I wasn't a DC person, isn't someone I knew much about until he did a few little scattered things for Marvel. The first thing I remember seeing of his and going, wow, that's cool, was the Doctor Strange Special Edition. Before there were a lot of trade paperbacks in the early 80s, Marvel did special editions, which would reprint classic stories on the Baxter paper, you know, for $2.50 rather than the $1, and it was on nicer paper. He did a wraparound cover for the first Doctor Strange special edition, which reprinted the Silver Dagger story by Brunner and Engelhardt. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool stuff. And the shop I was buying stuff at, the guy who was the comic guy there, was a big DC guy. And he said, oh, yeah, that's Bernie Wrightson. He did this and this and this and this and this. And I picked up some Wrightson then. I think my favorite of his work, though, was a Marvel graphic novel he did with Jim Starlin. That's just a fight between the Hulk and the Thing.
I remember that.
And it's so much fun. It's almost the opposite of the kind of stories Wrightson normally did, because he did a lot of horror.
He also did, when you were talking Captain Stern, we forgot about the Kitchen Sink series he did. Five issues with a special edition and an ash can. And they're not like high, big-ass collectibles, so you should be able to find them inexpensive, but they were not done in a book.
I think I mentioned that.
Yeah, but you didn't mention it was done as a comic series. You said it was heavy metal, never done alone. As far as I can tell, Kitchen Sink.
Yeah, and then I said the
original.
Five issue by Kitchen Sink.
No, I wasn't listening. You were just droning on and on. And on. But you didn't mention the gold variant of number one.
I didn't
see?
Know there was one.
Smart aleck. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me Nicolas Cage is making a surprise appearance at a Nicolas Cage movie marathon. Oh, wait, he did. Never mind.
Not only did he do that, he married a couple. There was a couple that got married there, and he's the one who performed the ceremony.
Oh, what a world.
To God, that would have been the greatest ceremony in the history of mankind. Oh, do you take this woman? And let's see if I can remember what they showed three movies, and one of them was Bangkok Dangerous. And I worked in a movie theater when that came out, and I saw the trailer, and I read all the stuff for it. To this day, I still don't know what the hell that movie's about, and I'm scared to watch it. The other bit of sad news is Dan Spiegel, who worked in comics from the 50s until... very recently passed away. He was in his 90s. He started actually working in comic strips, and he was so fast on the comic strip that he was looking for other work, and he went into the offices at Gold Key, which were being distributed by Dell, and everybody thought that the Dell comics were created by Dell. Nope, Dell was the packager and distributor. Gold Key, or Western, was the comic book company. And he went in to see them looking for work. And he brought samples of the comic strip he was doing, and he left with a job. And Mark Evanier talks a lot about him because he and Evanier became good friends. But he worked on most of the Gold Key / Dell / Western stuff, you know. Like... Turok the Dinosaur Hunter, a lot of the Tarzan spin-off books. He never worked on Tarzan itself, I don't think, but he worked on Kurok's Son of Stone. With Evanier, he did the Scooby-Doo comic in the 70s. I first found out about his work when he and Evanier did the Blackhawk series at DC, because I was a huge fan of Evanier's writing. And... I didn't know anything about Blackhawk, and I picked it up because Evanier was writing it, and it had these amazing Dave Cockrum covers. And the art inside wasn't like anything I'd seen before. It was really good, and it looked very different. And then I realized, oh, that's the guy who did the adventure stuff that Gold Key was publishing that I didn't read when I was a kid because I didn't like the adventure stuff when I was a little kid. He also worked with Evanier on a series called Crossfire, which was a spinoff of the DNA Agents. It started as kind of a superhero series and eventually morphed into a Private Eye series. And he's done a lot of work over the years. He's another one of those artists that other artists look at and say, this guy is very, very good. The one series I remember from him and Evanier that I enjoyed is one that's probably pretty obscure now. It was called Whodunit. And what it was, Evanier would write a mystery story featuring Crossfire, and it would be kind of a fair play mystery. He'd put the clues in, and then at the end, he would say, all right, whoever writes in with the solution wins $1,000. And then in the next issue, they would have the solution and the winner and have another mystery. And then, you know, when the last issue came out, the mystery was solved in an issue of Crossfire because, well, you know, it wasn't selling that well, so here's how it ended. Joe, did you ever pick up any Dan Spiegel work?
Actually, I found by accident. I was one of the Comic Cons I was going through where I was just kind of digging through books. I picked up a couple, I think it was called Brothers of the Spear. And the reason I picked it up is because it had two different covers. One was painted, one wasn't. Now I find out he did the work. So I'm pretty sure there's been tons of stuff I've picked up and just not realized he did the work. Especially since I was buying tons of Dell and Gold Key and all sorts of stuff.
Evanier has a great write-up on him that I'm going to put on our Facebook fan page. But let's see here. I want to get to the point where he talks about...
That comic is actually listed on his page. That's how I did the Eureka moment because I saw, hey, I picked up both versions of that comic.
Here it is. Evanier writes, I'm just going to read it from here. The way we worked together was simple. I'd write a script. I'd send it to Dan. He would draw it, usually have his daughter Carrie do the lettering. He would send it to me. I would make a few corrections necessary and send it off to be printed. Couldn't have been more harmonious and easy. The few corrections usually were that Dan would draw some scenes so clearly, I would realize that some of my dialogue was unnecessary, and I'd remove or change it. At least once I removed all the word balloons and captions I'd written for one page, because Dan's artwork simply didn't need my silly words telling you what you were looking at. Other companies grabbed him when I couldn't keep him busy. He worked for DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, many other publishers. Editors and writers would tell me how much they envied me being able to work as often as I did with Dan, and his artistry was much admired by other artists. Gil Kane would say that Dan was the best comic artist ever when it came to spatial relationships, meaning that in each panel, the figures and items were placed in perfect proportion to each other, perfectly setting the scene. When I visited Alex Toth, he insisted I bring him the latest pages I'd received from Dan so he could study them. He clearly envied the organic nature of Dan's work, how natural his staging was, and how well he handled light and shadow. He also talks about how he was never, ever, ever late. And in comics, that's always been rare.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest artists in comics, Wally Wood, never turned in work on time. Graham Ingalls never turned in work on time. You know, Kirby, one of the reasons Kirby worked so much is because he was never late. Ditko was never late. You had to be really special in order to be able to be late. By the 70s, it was a different world. But Spiegel was one of those guys who, okay, we need this in 2 weeks. He'd deliver it to you in a week, and it would be amazing. And, you know, as Evanier said, the only editing you'd have to do is maybe take out some of the dialogue because you didn't need it to tell people what the story was. He was 92, and he's a guy who worked in comics for 60 years. I can't imagine doing any job for 60 years. Can't even imagine 60 years. You know who does do a good job, no matter how many years it's been? Joe's not paying attention. Joe!
Yes.
You know who does do a good job, no matter how long it's been?
The Who!
These guys, our sponsors!
Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising.
Sorry, I was distracted because some bobo on Facebook was having one of his bitchy arguments, and some lady posted a thing, have some cake. And I wrote, but I like pie. And she's like, all I got is cake. So how about chocolate cake? No, vanilla. Well, what if we call it terrorist cake? And the guy is just bent out of shape Trump supporter. He defriended me. As I went to go put a Bob and Weevil pie thing on it, and all of a sudden everything he ever posted disappeared. And I'm like, wow, what a pussy.
There was one argument. There was one time on my Facebook page where I had posted something and someone decided to turn it into a political argument. And I don't even remember who it was, but he and I, just a friend of mine and I, just started posting ridiculous non sequiturs. Mm-hmm. I vaguely remember we took like one word out of context and just started going from there. And then it eventually became us talking about pie. And the guy was so mad. He's like, "Aren't you going to answer my question?" I don't know. You're going to send me pie? I'll answer your question if you send me pie. Ooh, you can send pie in the mail? Yeah, you can send pie in the mail. But after we did the ads, we asked Joe a very important question.
Is this about your keys?
Joe, are you wearing pants? No. Joe! What's going on the eBay?
Oh, you know, selling, buying, having all sorts of fun. Matter of fact, this is about the time where I'd like to tickle Corey's memory banks and
don't
ask
me.
The Strode.
Oh, well, that's...
Well, yeah. I'll wait for the guys with your keys to come in and tickle you at night.
Oh, God. I'm so glad I don't sleep in my house very much.
There is that. Corey, tell me about Alan Moore's magic words.
Magic words. I know about Maxwell the Magic Cat, but magic words. Was that, I honestly
don't know.
Well,
it's a trick question because it's not an Alan Moore comic book, which I thought when I bought it. But it's kind of like, you know, you see a Kevin Smith movie, Clerks, Dogma, versus movie made out of Kevin Smith's current, the old Spider-Man Black Cat, the Evil Amendu comic. You know, it's not a Kevin Smith movie. It's based on a Kevin Smith comic strip. Well, through Avatar in 2002, they came out with Alan Moore's Magic Words. And it's not an Alan Moore comic book, but what it is, it's a different European artist interpreting Alan Moore lyrics from his poetry and songs. So, you know, the results aren't bad if it's your type of thing. You know, you can check it out. Avatar's good at that. I mean, they drop a lot of names, but I think like, what was the one? There was a Jonathan Hickman one, like, Is This God or something, or some series, and he did, like, the first six issues, and then it just went on with other people doing it. Speaking of titles that didn't go on, Corey, tell me about Armageddon.
Armageddon was, now is this Armageddon 3001 or Armageddon the book?
This will be Armageddon from Chaos.
Oh, what's that, one of their big crossovers?
Yeah. Oh,
I don't remember much about it other than it was supposed to, it was when Chaos sales were starting to drop and they said, oh, we'll do a big crossover and that'll get everybody interested again. And it didn't.
Well, yeah, what happened was is it actually did what they said they would do. It destroyed the Armageddon universe as we know it. And there was actually a miniseries with Evil Ernie in it where he died, and sales afterwards weren't the same. And, you know, this came out in 99 2000, and we've talked before about, you know, I sold a ton of Chaos stuff in my shop, and, you know, then the line just kind of dropped over on itself. But it is kind of interesting because it is a horror style bad girl type book, their version of Crisis, and it brings all the Chaos characters together to fight the inevitable Armageddon. So it's it was actually kind of interesting, but it did bring the death knell of Armageddon for Chaos, that is. By the way, the book I was talking about, the Jonathan Hickman one, was God Is Dead, again, from Avatar. And he was involved, I guess he's been involved a little bit more, but let's see, how far does he go? The first six issues he was involved. After that, it was his book, but different people writing it. So, you know, again, you got to beware when you're looking at some of that stuff. Kind of like when Techno Comics was about, you know, everything was Neil Gaiman's Lady Justice. Nope. He just gave him the concept, or Leonard Nimoy's Techno Spocks or whatever. I'm making this stuff. Okay, let's go back to DC. We'll make this one easy. Pat, Corey, tell me about Batman GCPD.
Oh, that's a miniseries about the Gotham City Police Force. It came out before Gotham
Central.
We're
talking like 1996.
Yep, and wasn't it by Ostrander?
This one, the miniseries in 96, was Chuck Dixon and Jim Aperil.
All right, yep. And the one I'm thinking of was Gotham Knights, which came out years before that by Ostrander. But yeah, it was an okay miniseries. It wasn't memorable.
Yeah.
One of the things about Chuck Dixon, his work is very serviceable, but it's very rare that you read a Chuck Dixon book and 10 years later go, oh, yeah, I remember, that was a great story. There's nothing wrong with someone who puts out a solid, entertaining book on time. And Chuck Dixon puts out a solid, entertaining book on time.
Cool. The reason I mention these, because these are miniseries that I've actually sold off my eBays. And I've got a ton of stuff up there. I'm putting more on all the time. Check it out, KRAYZ. Send me a note. Usually the best way to do it is through eBay's system, that you are a connoisseur of this here podcast, and I will grab something off my vast accumulation of crap and include it as a freebie for you. And a key to Corey's magic reading room. Hey, I got the original key. It's not my fault people are making copies of the copy.
And you wonder why I have to take anti-anxiety medication.
No, actually I don't, but that's a different subject.
Well, after we do the eBays, we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not the part where I order a pizza and let Joe talk for half an hour. It's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking
out? Oh, if anybody wants a copy of Alter Ego number 141, send us a note, because for some reason I screwed up and ordered two. Usually when I buy the stuff through, discount comic book service or look through the previews catalog, I just look to make sure they're not listing a back issue. But for some reason I screwed up on this one, so I got 141 when it first came out, and I just got one in my last box day. This is the cover on this one is Rick Buckler from Detroit to Deathlock, plus Mr. Monster's comic crip, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Alter Ego is one of my favorite books, but not favorite enough to actually have two copies in my possession. So anybody wants it, come get it. You know, about a year ago today, I hurt my back, and I so enjoyed going through the recovery process last year that I thought I'd do it again at work. I wasn't lifting, okay? What happens is last year I had a bad twist because this overweight ski bag come out of the x-ray machine, and, you know, I was trying to let it lower itself down onto the ground without letting it fall, and I twisted and something popped and it hurt and I had to go in for adjustments and x-rays and all sorts of other things. Well, now we got this new inline system, so everything that comes in to be screened is basically on a waist-high table. So this huge, huge box came in. I mean, I looked at this thing. I know this thing's overweight. So I squared up. I slid it onto the table. Now, one thing about luggage is everything travels the belt system wheels up, which means in order for me to look into the bag, I have to flip it over with wheels down. The wheels go up because the belts move so fast that a piece of luggage will just sit there and spin its wheels and not go anywhere and cause a jam, which is why you always see the ticket agents flip the bag upside down, or if you're doing it yourself, wheels up, which is why you should never put anything breakable, puncturable, or poppable in the outside pocket, because more than likely your bag's going to be riding on that pocket on its way to wherever you're going, hopefully. So I got this huge box. I'm getting ready to lift it, you know, do the flip maneuver, and you know how when you're watching like an anime or a video game or something, and when the point of impact is like a white cross, I swear somebody hit me in my back with a white cross. Cross the hips, up and down the spine. I was like, ugh! So I called a friend over, and he, of course, you know, oh, yeah, we'll flip it over. He flipped it over, and there on the bottom side is the warning, 98 pounds. Oh, that was a good place to hide it, so I couldn't see it. And, of course, my colleague, he picked it up one-handed, did the Harlan Globetrotter thing on a finger, go, yeah, this thing's heavy. Sit down, you gimp, before you hurt yourself. So, anyways, I'm back on that program. I went to the chiropractor. They took x-rays, and he showed me last year where the injury was. It was a lot lower. This year it's a lot higher. Not as bad because there's no twisting involved, but it is going to be a couple weeks of, you know, chiropractor and adjustments and whatever. I should have just gone for the muscle relaxants. I had some of that stuff, man. It messes you up. Ooh. So, and of course, you know, the we're at that weird Minnesota weather where, like, in the morning everything's frozen, so you have to, like, tiptoe across the ice field so you don't slide on your big rear end. And then you scrape it up and it's all icy, but by noon, and of course I'm at work by 11, everything melts to repeat the process again. So I tell you, man, the whole world's against me, I swear. How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on?
You and I talked before the show started. I didn't get to read much in the way of comics or really anything else because they've been losing people right and left at the group home. And I'm greedy. So when they call and say, hey, can you work? Yeah, I'll work. But last week, somebody dropped a bomb on my personal life, just decided that they wanted to see just how big an IED they could toss at me. And it caused my anxiety to just explode in a way it hasn't since LionCon. So Saturday, when I got home from work, I had a lot of stuff I had to get done. I had two podcasts I had to mix. I hadn't been home for most of the week. I had to get laundry done. I hadn't even opened the fridge in 3 days. I'd been eating stuff out of bags that I bought at gas stations because it was like, I don't have time to cook anything. I don't have time for anything. What are you doing
typing
over there? Ah. It sounds like you're eating a dinosaur that's struggling.
Yes, stupid dinosaurs.
Now, one of the things about the anxiety, now I take a regular anxiety pill, but when it gets really bad, I have to take hydroxine HCL. Now, let me read what it says on the pill bottle, Joe. Take one tablet by mouth every 6 hours as needed.
Whoa, how else would you take a tablet?
For itching.
What did you do, just rub it on you? Take it anally? Stick it on your belly button?
Basically, it's a very high-powered antihistamine. So about 2 hours after I took it, I'm laying on the couch, tripping balls. So tired, the world doesn't seem real anymore. And I watched the big wrestling, the NXT TakeOver show, and when it was over, I didn't even turn the TV off. I just said, well, okay, I'm going to sleep now. And then my phone woke me up at, you know, a little before 6 so that I could get a shower and go into work. And by the time I got to work at 7, it was my waking up had given me enough adrenaline to get up and get showered and drive into work. And then I'm at work, and it's like, yeah, I'm really still kind of tripping. I'm barely awake. So I had to do an 8-hour shift where I'm giving out medication and making food, and I'm doing it so slow because I don't want to make any mistakes. And I get home and I lay back down. It didn't, the medication didn't completely wear off until mid-Monday while I'm at work. So I don't remember much of the weekend other than the wrestling and being at work all the time. I really
that
don't.
Explains your post about not liking pie and Christine Hendricks. I was a little worried about you.
Well, I had also shaved off the goatee because it was
the That's as bad as the... I'm not saying it. I hate the dry ones.
The other thing I'm freaking on, because Marvel delayed their previews insert... Previews was not shipped to comic shops until January 31st, and it's supposed to be in comic shops the last Wednesday of the month. Nope, it was not the last Wednesday of the month. It was the first Wednesday of February, which means that Box Day did not happen last weekend. Box Day is going to happen, well, when this episode comes out. Carry the 4, multiply by -3, square root of 2. Hopefully, Box Day will have come over the weekend that just passed. By the way, the weekend that just passed, I will not work from Friday at 5 in the afternoon until Sunday night at 10 p.m. And I'm still going to put in 52 hours at the part-time job and 40 hours at the full-time job. So hopefully, Saturday, the Box Day has occurred, and I just sat and read comics. But if not... If it's delayed, like it has been the last few weeks, that means the Box Day is not going to come until Tuesday. I'm not going to read anything for at least a week and a half.
What?
God
warm
damn it.
Cloth across the eyes. Sit down. Have some pie.
Joe, what are you geeking on?
What? Are you okay now? Can I just sit back, take the blue pill?
No, the blue pill's what made me so
okay,
tired.
Okay, well, tell you what would not make you tired is I had another web strip that I found that I'm actually enjoying. It's called Waspy Square by Paul Taylor. And I found it through Facebook, and it seems to be just a group of kids running about at this particular junction. They do it at an anime con, a little bit of love angst there. A little confused as to the age of the kids because some of the kids are drawn very short, some are drawn very small, some are drawn with head-sized breasts. So I don't know the characters yet, but I am enjoying reading through, and I've gone back and caught up with some of the adventures. So I always look forward to seeing a new feed on Facebook to catch up what's going on. I talked about my back getting hurt. One of the nice things about it, part of the rehabilitation process, I get a massage. Oh, yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. I mean, and the thing is, you know, I mean, I'm naturally tense in my shoulders anyways, and I'm even more so because your body's trying to compensate for the hurt part. And the other thing that I am enjoying a little bit is because I can't lift or move bags, I'm able to sit in our OSARP room where I just look at the x-ray all day long, or I mean the images for the most part. And because we actually look, I forget what the percentage is, it's real low. I do have more time now to actually read comic books. Consequently, I'll just go over three of them that I've been able to read, three of the newer ones. The first one was Trollbridge by Neil Gaiman and Colleen Doran. This is from the Neil Gaiman Library through Dark Horse Books. $15, nice hardcover. I've talked about some of the stuff in the past. Facts in the case of the departure of Miss Finch with Neil Gaiman and Michael Zulli. The Neil Gaiman's How to Talk to Girls at Parties with Neil Gaiman, Fabio Moon, and Gabriel Ba. This one features Neil Gaiman's Trollbridge, Neil Gaiman and Colleen Doran. And I knew a lot about this because Colleen Doran was talking about it up until when it's coming. And it's, of course, a kid wandering the countryside, runs across a bridge, and underneath it, of course, is a troll. And in order to escape the troll, the kid makes some promises. And you'd think, you know, this is going to turn out the way you would think a kid meeting a troll under a bridge would. But, dudes, this is Neil Gaiman. What he came up with was just brilliant. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. And, I mean, just like I did with the previous two books, I must have read the last five pages about a dozen times. I was just gobsmacked. I mean, Neil, you could write the bloody phone book, and it would be brilliant. We need a whole library full of Neil Gaiman. Come to think of it, the next book I talked about is called, from Image Comics, 1 Week in the Library. Authors, W. Maxwell Prince, John Amore, and Catherine Leno. It's a $10 original graphic novel. It's basically Welcome to the Library. It's here that every story ever written is cataloged and monitored by a single man who's begun to notice some strange things. The books are rebelling. One of those, why didn't I think of this concept stories? Fun artwork, easy to follow. The characters, well, you know the man. Everybody else you'll figure out as you meet them. And just a brilliantly done book, worth picking up. And the last one, of course, we all know because Corey has been talking about it, and I got kind of a mini ass the Strode. Volume 2, The Vision, Little Better Than a Beast. Corey, why did this wonderful book end?
Sales were not great, but what was going to happen is Tom King was doing the book. He had pitched 12 issues, and then they were going to hand it off to another creator. He became DC exclusive when DC knocked on his door and said, "Want to write Batman?"
Sure! I'd write Batman if they let me.
So he and the editor felt that the story had a natural conclusion. They didn't want to have another creator come on. So they ended the story.
It ends up, well, let's just say when the exclusivity ends, Mr. King wants to come back. He might be able to pick it up. But, yeah, I recommend going out and buy these first two graphic novels. And, of course, what issue were you in as a letter column?
I think it was
pick that one
six.
Up, too, and just hang on to it. Next time you see Corey, he might autograph it. Of course, he's got other things to autograph, and I hope he talks about it in his geeking. Also,
we talked about it again.
Well, talk about it again. This week, Solo Joe, number 4, the second part of my discussion with Pat is done, the one I was having such troubles with, but I was able to finally get through it. Just like most Marvel movies, there's a bonus at the end, so just because we say goodbye, don't you listen on. And I hope you all enjoy it. We'll see what other Solo Joes I can come with as 2017 continues. That's pretty much my geeking. How about you, Corey? What are you geeking on?
There has been a plethora of amazing wrestling.
That's a million-dollar word, plethora.
NXT TakeOver was phenomenal. The Royal Rumble was 4 hours long, had, what, 5 matches, one of which was the Royal Rumble. Access TV is showing more of Wrestle Kingdom 11, which was off the charts great. It's New Japan's version of WrestleMania. And there's just, it's like there's too much wrestling for me to watch, which is fine with me, you know.
Now, how do you watch it? Are you watching this on a tablet? Do you wait till you get home? Are you using your phone?
Oh, no, I watch it on the big
cool.
TV. Wrestling should be on the big TV. I don't watch much of anything on the tablet unless I go to the gym. And usually what I watch at the gym on my tablet are either situation comedies that I've already seen before, especially ones from the 80s, because, you know, they were filmed like crap anyway. So putting them up on a big screen just makes you go, yeah, they didn't have any money back then, did they? Or documentary movies where it's talking heads, you know, where it's not people going and doing things, but it's, you know, an interview, an interview, an interview. I also will watch a shoot interview, which is where they sit down with a wrestler and the wrestler tells stories rather than, you know, character stuff or, you know, the interviews you see on a wrestling show. A shoot interview is where they sit down and go, all right, tell us what was going on behind the scenes. Tell us, you know, basically tell stories of what it was like being a wrestler. But actual wrestling, movies, TV, I want to watch them on the big, on my big TV, which isn't huge, but it's big enough for my little tiny living room. One of my favorite shows from this year was The Good Place. It was a 13-episode sitcom on NBC. The premise was that a woman had died and gone to The Good Place. But she wasn't supposed to go to The Good Place. She was supposed to go to
The Bad
Place. Is
that the one with Ted Danson as kind of a angel that doesn't...
Ted Danson, he's the angel who created it.
Yeah, I read...
Do not let anyone tell you anything
about
the show.
I'm reading old Entertainment Weeklies, and then I'm leaving them at work for people to read. And I just read about that, and, oh, it sounds like an interesting show.
It's very good. It got picked up for a second season, and the second season will be another 13 episodes. And if you have not watched the show, do not let anyone tell you about it. There are a number of twists in the series, and every few episodes your jaw just drops. Because, you know, when you hear about the premise, you go, oh, every episode will be, she screws up and, you know, she learns a lesson about what it's like to be a good person. Well, that's how it is for a couple episodes, and then it changes, and then it changes again, and then it changes again. And even with that, even though it's a well-plotted, well-written show, it's really funny. And it's pretty rare for me to think of a network sitcom as something really funny, because normally when you watch a network sitcom, you don't really laugh.
Yeah,
that was
amusing,
funny.
Not
that was
bust
funny.
Your gut laughing.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'm going to geek on, Matthew Guy wrote a review of the first volume of Worldwide.
Ooh,
News.
Cool.
His review was, Monk is my favorite character of the bunch. I view it as if HLN went down the toilet hard and fast. I like the humor taking hot shots at the news of the day from back then. I want a second volume in March of 2018 with more material. You and Dan did a wonderful job. 4.25 out of 5 stars rating. A real indie classic. I want more. It has earned a spot on my bookshelf on top of Love is Love. I do not brag about what I do. And if I do, you know, I'm basically making a joke about it, except for being a national treasure, because by God, I
oh my God, I finally understand alt facts. National treasure. It's an alt fact. God, I've been so stupid. I'm sorry, what? I'll go on.
But the fact that this book is getting good reviews from people and people are enjoying it makes me very happy. It's one of the reasons why I'm advertising it on the show. And please go out, email Dan at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. It's $10 plus shipping and handling. When he sends them, he sends you a tracking number. We autograph them. And hopefully he starts drawing again because come on, look at the news. Look at who we have as president. Remember how, you know, they talk about how, you know, getting the news is like drinking from a water fountain. Joe, you've seen UHF, right? Who wants to drink from the fire hose? That's how it feels every morning when I wake up and turn on the news. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comic book ads and comic book
and we didn't once mention Harry Potter. Oh, shit, I just did.
Because I've never read the
books. I've skipped the movies. The books are okay.
But, and as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Ah, just hit my music.
By the way, we should probably tell people, you know what next week is.
What's that?
I don't even think if you know. Joe, how long we've been doing this show?
Well, today, pretty much forever.
Next week is our 7th anniversary show.
Dun, 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 and I like cake. Chocolate.
I was going to plan something special, but that would take work.
It would. I mean, it'd be like me gathering up Ask the Strode questions for our special 300th episode. It's just not going to happen, even though if you send them to me at crazycomics@gmail.com, we'll see what happens.
Goodbye!
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll. Hey, yo! Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here!
Done, bitches!